What did you hear in the governor's address that either you think is positive or beyond what we expect? I mean, was there anything in the governor's address that really made you perk your ears up, first of all?
Well, no, I think it was – I don't think there were really any surprises in there, per se. I thought that the governor's the approach, the presentation, if you will, was pretty, you know, very matter of fact. I think it was about a 30-minute speech. There were certainly no frills. Just kind of laid it out as he saw the difficult task ahead of us. And, you know, it's the first time that I've seen a budget or any kind of a speech by the governor in the House chambers when there was absolutely no applause from start to finish. There was and I think that's just a reflection of how tough fiscal times we're in.
Medicaid is one of the big issues, and I know you over the years have told me that you knew it had to be tackled. I think everybody knew at some point, and it's kind of there really isn't any more putting it off. It's got to be done, it seems like. The governor wasn't real strong on specifics, but he is going to look at some of the basics. Now, do you expect to get much feedback from the commissioners? The legislature going to sit down, look at the actual what's currently in state law to see what changes it can make? Because obviously you have to be worried about you can't just change things whole cloth.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the governor can't do that on his own. So it's going to take the General Assembly to really tackle the Medicaid issue and to try to come up with ways to curtail spending on it. And the governor, you know, he mentioned that. He said that obviously that we need to find ways to reduce the fraud within the Medicaid system. And I don't think there's anybody that disagrees with that. Number one, number two, the other two areas as ways to save or to reduce costs, if you will, is to look at the eligibility and do we expand, do we reduce, do we concentrate on just the most vulnerable citizens with our Medicaid services. That's one area to look at. And then, of course, the reimbursement rates to doctors and hospitals and nursing homes and so on and so forth. And that's going to be difficult because that's going to hit home on in everybody's district. And that's going to have an effect there in Macomb and in Quincy and in every community all around the Western Illinois and certainly around the entire state. So people are going to have the opportunity to weigh in and give their opinions on what's the best way to save money, reduce costs. And so we've got a lot of work to do ahead of us on that issue.
How much room does the state have to make changes to, say, eligibility requirements? I would suspect that the federal government has some rules, some things that maybe you can't deal with. What are there any areas in terms of eligibility that the state actually can tighten up those requirements?
Well, you're absolutely right in the fact that, when the state accepted some additional enhanced Medicaid money a couple years ago, that there were strings attached. And, one of the requirements of that is that we could not reduce some of the current levels of services. But those were basically on a time limit. In other words, we couldn't reduce services for a certain period of time. But that we're coming to the end of that period of time. So one thing we're going to be able to do is some of the things that had our hands tied will be reduced, number one. And then number two, we're going to simply have to be more aggressive when we ask for a waiver from the federal government. Now, we passed a Medicaid reform bill a little over a year ago, a year and a half ago now, and when it went out to Washington to get a waiver, to get approval, and we were actually rejected on most of that. We were denied that waiver request, but we were not, it's my understanding, the state was not very aggressive in seeking that waiver, and times have changed, and we now realize even more so that we simply have no choices, no options. I think the federal government also understands the states are struggling as well, that we have to get these costs under control. So it's going to be a multi-leveled approach to come up with a solution, but certainly the issue of seeking those waivers from the federal government is going to be a part of that.
Do you have any idea how many people you'd have to get off the Medicaid rolls? I mean, are you going to have to reduce, say, 10% participation? 20, I mean, do you have any ballpark?
You know, the governor had used he didn't use a number of individuals in his speech, but he did talk about dollars. You know, $2.7 billion is what he was the number that he'd come up with in trying to in savings. And now where that number came from, I don't know. I haven't really heard any discussion as to how many individuals. You know, to me, it's important that we that we take care of those individuals that are most vulnerable, whether it's young, old, and certainly the sick, you know, that those that simply have do not have any means to care for themselves, they have to be priority number one. And then from there, you know, it's going to depend on what, you know, what the fiscal reality is.
If you cut payments, though, are you that's one area you certainly can cut, but are you worried then about having people simply say, doctors simply say, you know, I'm not going to do it, and not have enough people who are willing to provide service to people who are on Medicaid?
Absolutely. And then on top of that, if we do cut rates to providers and we're still not paying them on a timely basis, which is certainly an ongoing problem that we have. So that makes the state's credibility, it comes into question there. So, I mean, it's really a multifaceted problem that that we have to address on several different fronts. So, you know, I think ultimately when we come up with this solution and we're looking at, you know, we're looking at the rates, we're looking at those that are eligible, we're looking at fraud and trying to stop that. I think it's going to have to be, everybody's going to have, as I think the governor mentioned today, everybody's going to have some skin in the game here. So it's going to take us, you know, looking at all of those different areas plus more and coming up with a solution that is viable and certainly that can get the support of the General Assembly.
Switching over to pensions briefly, the pension working group apparently is going to produce a report by April 17th, and my guess is it will take them that time because it's quite a complicated issue. Is that going to give the legislature much time enough to look it over and to get a budget built around some of those ideas? Because, I mean, a lot of those things would not kick in very quickly, but the point is I think the public wants to see the General Assembly addressing the issue.
Right. Well, I guess I have two reactions to that question. First of all, I think it's going to be very difficult for this working group to even have their recommendations by that date, by that April date. That just does not leave a lot of time. There are so many different stakeholders, excuse me, if you will. There's so many different stakeholders that are involved in this discussion. The governor said he wants to do something that's going to save money, that's going to reduce costs, but that's also going to be constitutional. And that, you know, to make that happen is going to be difficult. So I think it's going to be, the time constraints on that working group to make their recommendations is probably not realistic. Number one, and then number two, if we do get that information by April, I do think that there's time for the General Assembly. I mean, that's going to leave us the balance of April and all of May before a scheduled May 31 deadline to adjourn. I think that's doable, but I think the first part of that equation is going to be difficult to achieve.
I don't think there's any big secret that the governor and would like to push some of the pension obligations lower into the hierarchy, shall we say. And he made one remark that caught my ear. He said 3/4 of pension costs are for non-state employees, which would mean like local school districts. Is that going to be part of the package, though, pushing this burden to lower levels of government, more local levels?
Well, he said everything's on the table, right? So everything needs to be looked at. The working group, no doubt, will look at some of the local, you know, school districts, universities, community colleges, picking up some of that cost. I simply don't think it's anywhere as realistic to think that we can push all of that, you know, cost over onto the local taxing bodies. That's not going to happen. But, you know, will they be a part of the discussion? Will they need to be a part of the solution? I think that's going to be on the table, no question.
And also in terms of pensions, as Mr. Madigan was on the Illinois Public Radio, shall we say, post-game show, and he was asked about one of the big questions. And he said that one of the big questions was whether it would be constitutional to, you know, take for current employees to say at this date your benefits are up to some point, but then at some point we're going to reduce your benefits. And he didn't really have an opinion on the constitutionality of that. But is that also going to be something to look at? Like, can we actually change benefits for people who are currently employed by the state?
You know, I don't know. I'm not an attorney and certainly not a constitutional attorney, so I don't know the answer to that as well. I think that, you know, everybody is going to work towards reaching agreement that hopefully we won't even have to challenge in courts the constitutionality of the proposal. If we could, and that's a pretty lofty goal. Let's admit that. But if we could get all the stakeholders to the table, and everybody realize that it's not like we have good choices and bad choices. It's more bad choices and worse. And so let's put our heads together and try to come up with a resolution that's going to inflict the least amount of pain on the least number of individuals and do it in a fair and equitable way. I think that's going to be our ultimate goal.
Is your district, the 47th, going to be hit particularly hard with the layoffs? I mean, Jacksonville DeVelmel Center, I don't believe – is that in your
– No, it's not.
Okay, I didn't think so. Yeah. But are we going to see a lot of any facilities closed within the 47th district?
Yeah, there are some facilities that are going to be combined, offices combined in this in the governor's outline. There's four DHS service centers that will be – the staff will be moved to a different location and an office closed. So nobody's going to lose their job, but they're going to – you know, there would be the closures of some offices. There's also up in Monmouth a CMS IDOT garage up there that would be moved to Galesburg. So there are some closures, more consolidations, if you will, of some offices. No staff is going to lose their positions. It's just trying to cut some overhead. So we're not from that perspective. I mean, compared to, for example, in Jacksonville, where JDC is that would be, you know, obviously that's slated to be closed. The TAMS Correctional Center down in Southern Illinois, you know, slated to be closed. You know, there's a number of those larger facilities that's going to have a really a negative impact on those communities.